Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike to tell you along with Herb Tyler. We're at Acme Arshiles, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. Come on by and visit us. Herb and I will be here until 4:30 this afternoon, and then we'll give the handoff to the LSU Radio Network pregame. And then at 6:30 kickoff, LSU Ole Miss, and we want to thank our presenting sponsor also, Map Construction. That's Map, right. Built, Build Beyond. Herb, this is one of those games in the season. This is, man, when you think about those hot summer days, yeah, that you're doing conditioning drills,
yes,
and you running and you lifting weights and you practicing on your own, these are the moments against a team like Ole Miss. This is why you do all that. Now, you might say you do it for every game, but no, this is a little bit special because of the history,
yes,
with these two teams in the,
right,
Southeast Conference and their long history. Man, my dad, my grandpa, they would always talk about those LSU Ole Miss games
Ole Miss,
of the 50s and 60s. So this is why you do all this. A lot of excitement here. We had a full crowd here at lunchtime. A little bit kind of filtered out, but we still got a nice real crowd here at Acme,
yeah,
but man, everybody was all kind of pumped up. We had a lot of Ole Miss fans here at lunchtime, but Herb, it's one of those games. Alabama's one, but Ole Miss is another.
That's right. You know, it's, and I've talked about this in the past. Go Tigers, you're right.
There
we talked
go.
About this in the past. You know, there's a lot of people from the Louisiana, the state of Louisiana. I know a lot of people from the city of New Orleans who's actually gone to Ole Miss.
Oh, and the kids have.
The kids have.
Same thing on the Bayou.
I have friends now whose kids are at Ole Miss. And so it's such a close-knit, tied game as far as when it comes to people and family, the people of Mississippi, people of Louisiana, people who's from Louisiana going to Mississippi. So I think that brings a little bit of nostalgia to the game, and it makes it larger than what it is. But this Ole Miss game has always been a circled game on the schedule for LSU football, period. Even when I played, I just remember being very close. I guess the talent level was really close all the time. And today's game, it's not changed a bit, too. I think it's the same. I think that you have two really great quarterbacks that's going to be going against each other, both of which have a lot of history playing football in the SEC. When it comes to Nussmeier, not actually playing, but being and sitting and watching and understanding what SEC football is about. But with Jackson Dart, you know, coming over from USC and then playing with Lane Kiffin now, what, this is his third year, I think. And so he knows the landscape of the SEC football. And in my opinion, Jackson Dart is one of these special quarterbacks. I think he can run the ball. He can throw the ball. He has great leadership skills.
He ain't no small dude.
Everybody likes him. He's got good size.
Guy.
Yep, all of that stuff. So when you start talking about this game, you know, I'm excited for it. You know, last week or 2 weeks ago, I was really excited when Ole Miss lost.
Yeah, I saw that.
Just because I just don't like Ole Miss. Now, I do like Lane Kiffin, but I don't like Ole Miss. That's kind of my, you know, one of the – and it's not that I don't like Ole Miss. I just like beating Ole Miss. That's it. So, it's a beautiful thing. So, it's going to be interesting to watch, and it's going to be a really great game. And I think the fans are going to get a lot out of this game today because you got two really formidable teams that's going to be going up against each other. And Ole Miss is ranked higher than LSU, but I really think they're kind of the same team. I think they both are really, you know, number seven, number six maybe in the country type teams when they can play at their best level. Let's call it that.
You look at the coaches, both are from the offensive side, the football, but they do it differently. You know, with Lane,
mm-hmm.
and I think he gets a bad rap at times, of that he doesn't run the football, because the last 2 years they ran the football more than any other team in the SEC.
That's right.
But the reputation of him being a bit of a riverboat gambler, mm-hmm. throwing the ball all over the field, okay, that part is true. But he also runs the ball. You look at Brian Kelly, what his reputation was at Notre Dame. It wasn't about throwing the ball. It was about running the football. Now he got some different quarterbacks here at LSU instead of at Notre Dame. And the receiving core, they both offensive style coaches, but they do it differently.
Yep.
But between the two, the styles are different, and the personalities
completely
are
different.
Really different.
But, you know, Coach Kelly tries to turn on a little bit of Southern charm when he can. But just be you, Coach. It's okay. It's okay to be a little bit.
As long as you win, I could care less.
That's all that matters. And I don't think anybody else in Louisiana cares, as long as you win. But, you know, when you talk about Lane Kiffin, he's one of those fun guys, and he's been around the world. He's been in places you and I only dream to be, with his dad as a coach in the league for a long time. So when you talk about what his knowledge of the game is, in my opinion, I think that he has an understanding of what defenses are trying to do to offenses before he becomes an offensive-minded coach, if that makes sense. So I think he's learned how to be a really great offensive coach by understanding defenses and more of a deeper substance than any other coach, in my opinion, because he grew up in a household where his dad was literally probably the best defensive-minded coach in the league for 15 years and has the records to show for it. So, and that being said, you know, with Coach Kelly is one of those guys. He's just, you know, he's just been a grinder. He learned a lot from not only his own coaching experience, but watching other coaches that he grew up under as well. But, you know, being in that Northwest, Northeast, really, side of the country, and coaching is a lot different than what it is in the South. So now he knows the talent that he can get. Now it's time to just sling the rock all over the field. But I think there's a reason why we're doing that, is because we haven't found that true running back, which we're now hoping that we found that guy. And so now you can see trying to run the football a little bit more now moving into the second half of the season is going to be vital to LSU's remaining season.
I remember at SC, Pete Carroll's the head coach.
Yep.
Coach O is assistant head coach, defensive line coach, recruiting coordinator. Lane was the receivers coach. Steve Sarkisian was the quarterback's coach. Mm-hmm. Norm Chow was the offensive coordinator back then. So, man.
That's why they were who they were.
Man, that's why they were hoisting them national championships.
That's right.
They knew how to do it. And so. But I know Coach O always told me, Mike, I know. I've been against a lot of offensive coordinators. Lane's the best play caller I've ever went up against as a coach.
So does he think Lane is better than Steve Sarkisian?
He said Lane was the best.
Okay. I like Lane. Lane is one of those guys where.
Now, he knew Lane and Coach Saban wouldn't hit it off well at times because they're both hard-headed. They both want to do things their own way.
Well, you know, the thing about, I think, with that situation is Coach Saban is the guy that you have to at least put a little bit of guardrails on with. If you're Lane Kiffin, right, I got to have
but
some guardrails.
But I think he changed Nick. He forced him to change and be more of a passing offense.
So what I was going to say is when you get inside of those guardrails, now I know the rules of the game. Now, how can I manipulate the game enough to be able to play it a little bit teetering on those lines, right? And I think that's what Lane did, and I think that's why you saw the success that Steve had as well when he came in after Lane. And so I think that Lane Kiffin has a knack for connecting with people. And that's something special that you have when you're a leader, when you're a coach, when you have – the ability to be able to bring people into your world, but not just that, but also take their world and incorporate it in yours and then make them great or greater than what they are. And that's the thing that I think Lane has when it comes to players and coaches that coach for him, players that play for him, and then the people that are around the program. I think those people are connecting with him. That's why, you know, you go to Ole Miss and you think, like, he's got Ole Miss on a national level. He really does. Like, people were looking at it.
No, we weren't talking about that.
No one was. But he's doing that. If Lane was at a little bit larger school, he would be in a whole nother world. Trust me. I think that he could. He's a guy that connects with, like, kind of like the little bit of opposite of Brian Kelly. He does not connect that well with a lot of people. And it's not that he's not trying. It's not for a lack of effort. But I think it's just because people don't find what he does interesting because he's just straightforward. This is what I am. This is what I do. Whereas Lane's cracking jokes. He's got his dog out there. He's he can go and mingle with the quarterback. He can go mingle with the receiver and hang out with those. Well, Coach Kelly's not doing that. You know what I mean? So it's just different. So, but we look forward to a day when Coach Kelly turns into somewhat of a Lane Kiffin and continues to dance with players on the videos. So,
well, I don't think you'll be seeing that anytime soon. But with 43 seconds left, South Carolina scores a touchdown makes it 27-25 Alabama. The two-point conversion they did not hit on.
Nope.
So with 43 seconds left, Alabama 27, South Carolina 25. So unless South Carolina can get an onside kick here, looks as though the Tide will squeak out a win against the Gamecocks in Tuscaloosa. And, man, this is back-to-back weeks now. Alabama fans ain't happy. They'll be happy with the W, but, today was difficult for them. And defensively, man, Alabama's got a lot of problems in the secondary here, a lot.
It reminds me of a home team by the name of LSU of like a year ago, at least. It's a thing, right? If you're not coaching these guys up, if you're trying to overcomplicate things, this is what you get. But it doesn't seem like that. It seems like it's just the fact of the matter is that Alabama's DBs are just not there. They're not on the same level as they once were.
You lost a first-round pick, mm-hmm. DB, in Terrion Arnold.
Yep.
He's with the Lions. Kool-Aid McKinstry, second-round pick. He's with the Saints.
Yep.
Then they had a transfer dude who was a freshman All-American. He goes to Ohio State.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Again, this is why I always argue about this next man up.
Yeah.
It depends on who that next man is.
They don't
have nobody in that caliber to replace three guys and two of them in the National Football League.
No, right, and that's a difficult thing. And at the end of the day, it's one. Oh, look. They got it.
Goodness.
South Carolina got the ball.
On an onside kick, it looks as though
South Carolina has
recovered with 40 seconds left in the game. And this may be setting up a scenario very similar to when South Carolina played LSU.
Right.
Remember, they had the kicker set up for the game-time field goal, and he pushed that babe a little bit left on here. The ball bouncing around the field. Alabama had a couple shots at it, mm-hmm. and then South Carolina comes up with the recovery.
It was nice.
You couldn't script it up better because of the way it kind of rocked around a little bit on the field. And now South Carolina is going to have an opportunity here to win in Alabama. Woo-wee.
So if they win in Alabama, the goalposts in Alabama might travel down the street.
They'll survive.
No, they might travel down the street, and they might just get tossed away and say, we're done with football for the season.
Too bad we didn't do that game last week.
That's right.
Vanderbilt was playing Alabama.
Oh, that would
Because they
great.
Finally had to fish that babe out of the river.
Out of the river. That was
and then they cut it up selling pieces for NIL. Man, that would been something I'd have thought of.
That's right. $2.50
I'd have got a lot more than that. We'll be back with more of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettelia along with Herb Tyler. We're at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. Come on by and visit us. They got great food and drink specials. Jason and the crew will take real good care of you here at Acme Oyster. We'll be back right after this break. We're back here in our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettelia along with the legendary Herb Tyler here at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. Want to thank Acme Oyster House and also our presenting sponsor, Map Construction. The game just ended. Alabama holds on 27-25. They got a little bit of pressure on Sellers on a third down play.
Yeah.
And he threw the ball up. Looked like a ball had helium in it.
Didn't know what he was doing.
Man, I could have caught that one playing center field. It went up in the air. Alabama makes the interception and ends up winning it 27-25. Talk about a nail biter. And we've seen Sellers with those throws. He did some similar stuff against LSU. Just kind of put the ball up there and it gets picked off. South Carolina played hard today. I give them credit. And their defense got after Milroe pretty good. But Alabama comes out with the victory, 27-25. Milroe throws for a little over 200 yards today. But that two-minute throw with 2 minutes left, everybody's jammed up on the line of scrimmage thinking they're going to run it. And, man, he makes a throw pop right over the top, gets a touchdown, and that basically kind of sealed it.
Well, you know, South Carolina is a game that we know – or a team that we know all too well and how they played against LSU. LSU squeaked out a victory against them earlier in the season. And South Carolina is one of those teams where they're going to be tough. They're going to play you tough every play, every minute, every second. The problem is they just don't know how to finish. And
they're
we
not
saw
a
that.
Good closer.
No, we saw that against LSU because they had LSU on the ropes. And there was no reason for LSU to win that game. But same thing right now with Alabama. But Alabama is struggling.
Whew.
And they started the second half of the Georgia game. Remember, they were up big in the first half. Second half, Georgia comes storming back. And then all of a sudden, last week against Vanderbilt, you know, Alabama plays like, you know, really subpar football, if you want to call it that. And but Vanderbilt's not a pushover. Let's call it that, too. So it's tough to go to Vanderbilt this year in 2024 and come out with a huge win, no matter who you are. But they should have beaten Vanderbilt.
But they don't have the most important position on the field locked up, quarterback, South Carolina.
Oh, South Carolina, they have two quarterbacks that can run the ball very, very well. That's it.
Throwing it.
They can't throw the football.
Can't throw.
They can't finish the game. They can't. There's another dimension to the quarterback position that they're not able to do right now. So, but they're gonna be all right. But Alabama is the one that I'm really, because you know they were number one going into the game last week. They did not look like a number one ranked team last week, and this week they don't look like a top 10, top 5 team either.
No, they don't.
So it's going to be interesting. So which leads me to believe as LSU continues to play and grow, as we've been seeing the progression that they've gone under every week. They lost against USC. They came back to play South Carolina. They could have lost that game, but they won the game. They found a way to win the game. And in every other game that they've played, they've been really, you know, outmatched the other team, if you will. So today is the day.
We'll find out a lot about Blake Baker's defense today.
Today is the day to find out if they've really taken the next step in this season, just this season, to see where we're going to end up at it then.
Okay, we'll get into this a little bit more as the show goes along, but the wide receiving core has sort of been really diminished now. Doesn't look like Chris Hilton. He's going to be playing. C.J. Daniels is hurt now. This is a either squat or get off the pot moment for Shelton Sampson.
Yeah.
And listen, Shelton got talent. I don't think anybody would question that Shelton Sampson has talent. But he's got to be able to gain some confidence as a player. And we saw the last time, you know, Coach Kelly wanted to hand him the baton and said, go out there and make something happen. And then he makes a couple of mistakes, and you could read Coach Kelly's lips. Hey, you want to play or what? Mm-hmm. You tell me. But this is his moment tonight that he has an opportunity, and we'll talk about certainly the growth of Aaron Anderson and Zevin Thomas in this offense along with Kyron. But Herb, to me, this is a moment that Shelton's got to grab kind of the bull by the horns.
Well, every moment is that moment, right? Because every opportunity you get, you should be
but
trying.
He ain't done it yet.
He hasn't. So with it, you know, so let's be real. If that's the case, do you really expect it to happen today? Now you want it and you need it to happen today, based upon injuries and things of that nature. But sometimes the light bulb just doesn't click
at all,
and sometimes it just doesn't click at the right time. So that's why it was really interesting to see Aaron Anderson step up. Mason Taylor step up his game and become what he's become. Daniels as well. And these guys are playing really great football. Now it's time for your Shelton Sampson to step up. In my mind, the way that he steps up is you get him some quick passes. Don't ask for anything that's, you know, where he has to think about, read defenses and, you know, either curl up or come across the field or cut out or whatever the situation may be. Get him some simple stuff, some quick hitches, or maybe something down low where you're throwing the ball up to him as an alley-oop type of thing. You get him some confidence so you can gain some confidence and get on the field. I think that's how you get him going. So outside of that, if you're trying to get him to think about all this, maybe his head's swirling and he can't utilize his athletic ability to be who he is wanting, who we're wanting him to be on the field. So at this point, I think it's going to be a chess match for the coach, you know, from the play caller to the quarterback to Sampson. How do we just get him involved? Now, outside of that, now here's another thing. How do we get our running backs involved in the passing game?
Throw the ball to Caden Durham.
Right.
I know he can catch it.
He can catch the football. You get him the ball. If you're running out receivers, then you got some running backs and you got two other tight ends that can catch the ball, and they're tall as I don't know what. And those guys deserve to get in the mix as well.
We'll be back with more of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettelia along with Herb Tyler here at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. Come on by and visit us. Hey, we'll have a lot more Tiger talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Welcome back to our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettelia along with Herb Tyler. We're at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. Come on by and visit us. We're about a mile away from Tiger Stadium, so if you're in the area, stop on by. They got a lot of great food, drink specials here. Jason and the crew do an outstanding job taking care of everybody
here.
Yes,
they do.
Each and every week. And we also want to thank our presenting sponsor, Map Construction. Couldn't do it without them, and Herb knows a lot about Map Construction.
That's right.
But we ain't got a whole lot of time to talk about Map right now. But we're into our Tiger Scout Notebook, brought to you by Thibodaux Regional Health Systems, totally focused on patient care. And on our Open Heart Doula's talk and text line from the Rebel Walk, we have Leanne Herring. Leanne, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your time this afternoon. And Herb and I were talking about this. This is why you lift all those weights and do all that stuff in the offseason to get yourself in shape for games like this. This game's been circled on the calendar for both teams for quite some time and for a large number of years. So that is something special still about LSU Ole Miss.
You're exactly right. Like I said, I said it on our show on Tuesday. You know, make no mistake about it. This, in my opinion, is a game that's going to be a playoff game. And if you guys caught South Carolina, Alabama, that came to the wire. You know that they are packing up and everything ready to get out. My goodness, talk about that. South Carolina playing that Beamer ball, but Alabama skating away. I think that tonight in Death Valley, it's going to be no different. That, you know, I really think it's going to become a line of scrimmage battle along with the quarterback pressure. I mean, offensively, LSU gets really creative, Mike, and they're great at getting mismatches with counters, utilizing their guard, their tackle, and their tight end. And LSU loves to run this unbalanced set to see how this defense reacts. And the question is, how can the defense react? Because at Ole Miss, because LSU is going to probably be one of the best offenses that they've played as of late. You got to remember, I mean, you guys know this. LSU has big athletic skills, offensive line. They like to pull out of the backside. They do a great job in their RPO. And, I talk about the tight end play, and I think that this is going to be a really big thing, especially when you're the LSU offense trying to get, you know, Jackson Dart, unsettled, but more than likely this Ole Miss defense. I think that we're going to have a difficult time as far as the LSU offense and, you know, going head-to-head on our defense is those exit flat routes and those concepts that LSU likes to utilize with the tight end. Like I said, the Tigers do a great job in the RPO, and I think those late leaks out, the tight end is going to come into big play here. And, of course, you know, putting pressure on Dart on that, coming on the LSU defense. But I think that offensively LSU gets really creative, and I think that it's going to be a challenge defensively for Ole Miss to get to the plate. They have a lot of playmakers. We know Walter Nolan, Centarian Perkins, you know, Princely will be back. But, again, this LSU offense, starting at the offensive line, and some of the playmakers, as you guys know, are difficult. And Kelly likes to get real creative. So it's going to be an interesting matchup on this one.
Leanne, Trey Harris, and we go back a few years, Trey. I saw him when he was the quarterback at Como High School, and he was throwing the ball to a dude that was pretty good, too, Malik Nabers.
Malik Nabers.
That was a pretty good combination. But, you know, when he came out of high school, he was not a super highly recruited guy. He was sort of a B-list guy for a lot of schools, and he goes to Louisiana Tech, and he goes through the transition of option quarterback to being a receiver. And by the time he had decided he was going to leave Louisiana Tech, he had everybody after him. But one school, that was LSU. They got in a little bit late to talk to him, but LSU really didn't press the issue because I think had they done it, Trey would have went to LSU. But they didn't get involved heavily. And I know in speaking to him, he said, I wanted to go somewhere where they were going to throw the football a lot. I knew about Coach Kiffin's reputation. And he said, I thought Ole Miss gave me the best opportunity to flourish, and it has. And I knew one thing. When it was listed as questionable Monday, I knew damn well he going to play Saturday. Trey, I don't care if he's got to drag that leg or whatever, he's going to play because it what it means to him, a Louisiana guy – playing in Tiger Stadium, going up against LSU, against a team that I think deep down inside he really wanted to play for, but they didn't give him that option. And sometimes, Leanne, we all know this. God puts you in the right place at the right time.
The right time.
And I think it was the right time for Trey to go to Ole Miss. And he talk a little bit about his development, what you've seen over the last 2 years. Because he could have come out early for the draft if he wanted to.
You know, I was talking with a lot of, you know, other people in media and, you know, just kind of, you know, kids like Trey Harris. Like you said, you see him all the time. They go to other places. They haven't really reached their level. But, you know that when they go to the, I always call it the right fit. And for Trey Harris, Ole Miss is definitely the right fit where he could come to develop. And I think it speaks volume along with Trey Harris and a lot of other players that could have hit the portal or, you know, hit the portal or, you know, made their way to the NFL. But they've decided to stay because this pro mindset that Lane Kiffin and his staff have really built here and the culture they have really built here has really, trickled down to these athletes wanting to stay and wanting to develop because they know what they can become at Ole Miss. You know, Trey Harris was, like you said, not the most sought-after recruit, but a lot of those times, those kids I find in the recruiting, you know, recruiting trail, those are the kids that often pan out the most because they have a different kind of grit about them and they haven't reached the ceilings yet. And their willingness to work. And like you said, Trey being questionable, I wouldn't, this is a game that I believe we're going to see Trey Harris. I don't think he's going to miss this one for a lot of reasons. They're going to have to drag him out without him getting some playing time. So I definitely believe that Trey Harris it'll be a game time situation. I don't know if we'll see as much of him because, of course, you know, Ole Miss has its picking and choosing a lot of offensive weapons, and I'm sure we'll see a lot of it. I do believe that Lane Kiffin and Charlie Weiss Jr. will go with what we saw at South Carolina is trying to have a better ball distribution, especially having to go against, you know, try to control this ball game early and not let it get too far away from them or have to play catch up. Because, like I said, you know, LSU defense does have its holes and whatnot. But like I said, you got to talk about this LSU offense. I mean, I was at Duncanville last night watching Duncanville DeSoto, and I know that freshman running back y'all have out there. Seeing him a couple times, Caden Durner, I know he was questionable to see if he was going to be. But, I mean, what he's done, he's been another young playmaker for Brian Kelly that's just been outstanding, which should be no surprise. You almost look past the size and everything because everything else. So it'll be interesting to see if he's back in the game today because he could be another he could create a lot of chaos on the offense for this Ole Miss defense, especially those linebackers in the back trying to escape away from his agility and his speed if he does play today for LSU.
Well, Leanne, you know, we talked a lot about Ole Miss's offense and Lane Kiffin, and that's what all the talk is always about. But my question is, how does Ole Miss's defense stop what I like to call a potent LSU passing game? You know, Nussmeier's been just nothing less than phenomenal, in my opinion, being able to distribute the ball to different players and leading his team in the direction that they're in. So, you know, coming into this game, I think that Ole Miss is looking to do everything they can to stop Nussmeier in that passing game. How do you think they go about doing that?
You know, I think that the secondary is going to be really instrumental in this. We know that LSU loves to run a lot of unbalanced in motion and keep their defense off their toes. The Tigers are just really good schematically at that. And again, I say this with all due respect. We're the top defense in the country, but again, we haven't had quite a test like we have had against LSU and put the rivalry, put all those intangibles in that. But I do think that our offensive line, you know, has to stay on track for this one. The Ole Miss offensive line and the defensive line are both, it's going to be a game of trenches. I know that you're talking about how we break down that LSU offense. I think it's just having to control and spread the ball and make sure that we put a lot of man-to-man and try to put Nussmeier and get him in that quarterback, you know, put under pressure because he's thrown for 61%, like you said, and he has a lot of weapons, a lot of assets. But we also have seen, you know, him have trouble on not being able to take care of the ball. So I think for Ole Miss, as far as the defense, the secondary is going to have to come up big in this one. They're going to have to win those the turnover battles, and I've been talking about it, is the third and longs and trying to get similar to what LSU will do with Jackson Dart, is trying to get Jackson Dart in those third and longs. I feel like Ole Miss will try to do the same with the LSU offense and trying to slow them down. But I do believe whoever wins the line of scrimmage battle in this one and also the quarterback battle with the fewest mistakes is going to have a good shot of coming out of Death Valley one way or another with the win in this one. But again, I do believe it's going to be a very tight-knit low scoring game because you got an excellent LSU offense. I'm going to guess one of the top defenses in the country. But again, something's got to give. It's just a matter of who's going to play better ball in this one.
Leanne, one of the guys that and looks as though it has been trending that he probably will play. I think it's a difference maker up front, and that's Princely Umanmielen, the defensive end who we got to see play at Florida. And he, no question, last year, he was Florida's best defensive player. It wasn't even close there. And it's his ability to affect the quarterback. Sometimes it's not does he get a sack or a tackle for a loss, but his presence. I hate to say it, almost like an odor. I mean, you know it's there. And you're cognizant of it every time he's out on the field. That's a big difference to me defensively if Princely's playing or he doesn't because of his pass rush ability.
And I'm glad you brought Princely up. You know, whether it's a game-time situation, of course, right now it's a game-time decision. We had some Sarian Perkins, you know, really step up. But the pass rush is another key thing that's going to be key in this game. And I do believe that we saw a lot better improvement with the pass rush against South Carolina. But again, this is not that South Carolina is by no means the same level at that LSU will be playing up. So Ole Miss is definitely going to have to clean up the pass rush tonight. And, you know, but like you said, Princely's just a present. When he gets there, he's going to make plays. They're going to be challenged on those underneath routes, especially the way that LSU loves to run those deep routes, opening the underneath stuff. So they're going to have to put pressure on the linebacker coverage. But again, I think if Princely plays, and then we have a lot of other players, that's the one thing I think that has been key for Ole Miss coming into the game that we haven't had in past years. We have depth on both sides of the ball. We're playing, you know, very balanced ball, but it won't be any easier. I just think that we have a better footing and a better team that we brought into Death Valley in a long time, and it's going to be a close one. And, you know, we got to think about this. We talked about the atmosphere. Ole Miss has 50 kids on that roster that have never played in a game of this magnitude. And some of them may get this opportunity tonight. You know, playing at, you guys know, playing at that kind of stadium puts a whole nother dynamic on already into the intensity of this game. So another opportunity where, you know, that both these teams are going to try to create a chaos, not just on the field, but trying to get, opposing offense, you know, off their track and off their guard, you know, and get them off their mind and play mind games with them, basically, you know, because of this is going to be that kind of pressure situation. But I do believe, you know, we're going to see a lot. The special teams have really dictated the outcome of this game historically. And I believe that special teams will also be a deciding factor and, at the outcome of this game too, as well. Because I really do believe that this is going to be a different kind of game than we saw last year. It's going to be a lot closer, and it could get really ugly really fast.
Leanne, thanks so much for joining us. I'm glad you brought up special teams, because keep an eye out on the zero for LSU, Zaven Thomas, who has come close, and I mean real close, a couple times of breaking a punt return for a touchdown.
Yep.
And so you, eventually when you hit it a couple times and you don't quite get it, eventually it happens.
Yep.
And so that's something for the Rebels. They're going to have to be cognizant of. LSU in the past, it had been a lot of fair catches. It hadn't been the run backs. But number zero, Zaven Thomas, he gives them a different element. And the guy was a guy that, in covering Ole Miss, you know that he was at Mississippi State for a couple of years. He's made quite an impact in the return game for LSU.
No, like you said, the Rebs are going to have to be of sound mind in this one, just because of the way LSU is coming in. They're playing on their turf at home. And like we said, this game historically is one of the most underrated rivalries at night. So, but I do believe that special teams historically have dictated how this one's going to go. So this may be the night that might happen on either side. So I do believe that special teams, if it comes down to the wire, will be a key deciding factor aside from the quarterback battle and winning that line of scrimmage in the battle in the trenches.
Leanne, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate
it.
Hey, I saw you took a picture with a dude from, what, it was from DeSoto High School. He's 6'8". 350 pounds. Okay, and he's going to Syracuse? Well, I guess they got name, image, likeness in New York, too. They got money up there. So, man, I took a look at that.
Yeah,
goodness.
We've been trying to – he's a really great kid. really sound leader. I mean, he's got his own security. It's really quite funny. I've seen him, you know, I've known that kid a while, and you know, he's got his own security. The opposing teams are always taking pictures of him. But yes, I told him, you know, it gets a little cold on the East Coast, so if you ever want to come to a sunny place, there's always room to sit for him. But yes, no, there is a lot. Like, you talk about a presence, you mentioned it, and he came to mind when you talked about Princely. You see Byron Washington, and he is that presence. I think that that opposing defensive line that has to face him every week, even if it's high school football and top teams in high school, there's their offensive line, and then there's Byron Washington, you know, a man amongst the kids, you know, and it's hard to believe that he's just a, you know, he's a senior, so, but a really, really great kid and everything. But yes, he's going to Syracuse, but thank God for the transfer portal, because I don't know if he can quite, I don't know how that snow's going to treat him after a while. He might miss Dallas a little bit after that. But no, great game, and, you know, Duncanville, DeSoto, Duncanville remains number one. It was a close one. Keelan Russell, of course, Alabama commit, who everybody is still after. Did a phenomenal job leading his team to that victory over DeSoto last night.
Yeah, I do know those checks clear from New York, so it's all good. And again, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time, and always do a great job. Thank you
That's
so much.
Right. Yes.
Thank you so much. Hadi,
hadi. All righty. It's a wrap on our Tiger Scout Notebook, brought to you by Thibodaux Regional Health System. I let it get that hottie tied.
Yeah, you know, I was about to say
come
something.
Come on, I let
come
it get
on.
It in. I
she
let
lucky
it get
we
in.
Like it, but no hottie tied. It's go Tigers, baby. Okay, my bad.
I let it get it in. That was brought to you by Thibodaux Regional Health System, focused on patient care. We'll be back to finish it up here in our number one of our Tiger Tailgating Show. Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show, right here from Acme Oyster That's House right. in Baton Rouge. We'll be back. Finishing up here on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show, Mike Detilla along with Herb Tyler. Our number one, hey, we're here till 4:30 this afternoon. Come on by and visit us. We're at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road. A lot of LSU Ole Miss talk. Come on by and visit us, or keep your dial tuned in to the Big 878 WWL. We'll be back with more Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating right after this news break. We're back here on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Detilla along with the legendary Herb Tyler here.
Legendary.
That's it, baby. At Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road. In Baton Rouge, come on by and visit us. Jason and the crew will take care of you. Also, too, if you are looking for someone to cater your events, and if it could be for LSU tailgating or whatever, give them a call here at Acme Oyster House, and Jason can take care of that for you. He just come back from a couple runs already from Tiger Stadium. So if you need that, you can give them a call here at Acme Oyster House. Want to also thank our presenting sponsor, Map Construction. Map Built, Build Beyond. Herb, Leanne brought up in her segment about Caden Durham. His health is a little bit in question. I think he plays tonight. He's got the toe injury. Miles Fraser kind of took a tumble and kind of caught him a little bit in that final game. But really, man, unbelievable first half of a game.
Unbelievable.
You know, to think that he rolled up that type total yards and he only played a half and he got hurt in the game. So you see the special element, and you and I have talked about this before.
Yep.
There is something about him, and I think I understand why Brian Kelly didn't hand him the baton right off the bat, but now he's your best back, and you got to go with him at this particular time. But his ability as a runner and a receiver, his speed, his quickness, and ability to get up the field is so impressive.
Yes.
For a freshman, and he hasn't put the ball in the turf yet.
Well, you talk about Caden Durham and the way of, you know, initially LSU didn't want to play him because he's a true freshman, right? And sometimes you just have to let the dog go, right? You unleash him and let him play.
Almost now, like if you got kids, yes, and you got to give them the keys to the car.
You
got to
let them go. Let them go.
Yeah, eventually, you got
to
do it.
You got to allow them to have the opportunity to make whatever mistakes they're going to make. Now, here's the thing. They went into the season with Caleb Jackson thinking that he was going to be a really good mix in the season with in the backfield with Josh Williams.
Caleb too big. Caleb's too big.
It's something else going on there. I don't think it's size. I think it's something else going on there. I just don't think that he has the confidence when he gets the football in hands, because he does not run like that. So, but then you turn around and a couple weeks ago, you know, or 3 weeks ago, really, Durham comes in and he just makes a showing and he just does his thing. And then 2 weeks ago against South Alabama, Caden runs 7 carries, 128 yards, 1 touchdown. And then you throw him the ball 3 times and with 89 receiving yards and 1 touchdown, the long was 71. That's where he showed his speed, his ability to be able to be shifty, to be quick, to also have an opportunity to just be the great running back that LSU needs, a well-balanced running back. So I'm excited about Caden moving forward. I hope he plays tonight. And if he doesn't play tonight, I still need somebody else to step up, right? We still need someone else that can tote the rock, someone that can pass protect, and somebody that can grab a screenplay and take it 71 yards if we need to. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out, because I'm going to tell you, we're going to have to put pressure on Ole Miss by scoring points. It's not going to be, we were talking about a low scoring game earlier, but I don't think it's going to be that.
No,
Ole Miss is
Leanne does, but I don't.
Who's suspect is LSU's defense. Now, who's been decent every now and then is LSU's defense, but who has a really good, consistent play is Ole Miss's offense, and they've been playing very, very well. So we'll see what LSU can do to Ole Miss's offense to kind of slow them down a little bit. But Jackson Dart is one of my favorite quarterbacks in the country. And he can move with the football in his hand, and he can get rid of the ball by throwing it. But he also is a really great leader, and he allows those guys to be really great on his side of the football.
One of the things I've noticed in watching film of him the last couple of weeks, and he's a high percentage passer. He's completing over 70%.
That's right.
But I'll be honest, Herb, he passed up, especially in the Kentucky game and a few times against South Carolina, easy throws underneath that would have been 7-8 yards, okay, to throw, and I don't know what he'd get after the catch, but he passed that up to try to hit the big play downfield. Now, I think a little bit of that is an extension of lane.
That was exactly what I was going to say.
I think some of that is, but as a quarterback, having played that position, kind of give your thoughts on you pass up most likely a first down throw to try to hit a 30-yard play downfield.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a direct connection, correlation to Lane Kiffin in my mind. I think that the two are connected, like I was talking about earlier. I think Lane Kiffin really connects with Jackson Dart in the way that you see that in what you're talking about. So one of the things that Lane Kiffin talks about is high risk, high reward. And so those guys are always really trying to get the most value out of what they're doing, right? And so it's boring to take the check down and get, you know, 10 yards and then move the chain and let's do it again. But it's really exciting when you can hit that, you know, 70-yard bomb down the sideline and it's really tight coverage. So it's exciting. But as a quarterback, what you do is you're supposed to take the check down. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean, you know, so Drew Brees will take the check down all day long, right? And then you'll have another Brett Favre. He's a gunslinger, as they talked about. He's never taken a check down. I don't even know if he knows what a check down is. But what I will say this, though, it's important that in knowing what to do inside of the flow of the game.
I think it's down in distance, a lot of it, too, correct?
The flow of the game, where are we in this game, right? Do we need a touchdown now? Is the first down in 10, can I take a shot? Yeah, you can. But is it 3rd and 7 or is it 2nd and 7? No, you don't take that shot really, because you want to make it, you know, a short yardage gain at that point. And it's just a little bit difficult for the offense to get first downs when it's a long yardage situation. So I don't know. I think that Jackson Dart is going to always be a little bit of a riverboat gambler. He's going to take his shots when it's time. I kind of like that, and I think that's something that USC didn't like about him when he was at USC.
They didn't like that.
That's exactly right. And so then now he's at a place where that allows him to do that and be who he wants to be. And sometimes to have your individuality is a good thing, because Jackson Dart literally is one of the best players in college football. He's completed 127 of 173 passes for 2,100 yards, and he's got a long of 75. I mean, this guy is just really balling out of control right now. He's 13 touchdowns to only 2 interceptions. That's a really great ratio. That's okay. Efficient.
The other part about his game, and doesn't get talked about, but I thought he really hurt LSU with this last year. was third and seven. He run the damn ball for 9 yards.
This is what I've been talking about.
So that part, and a lot of people say, oh, I'm afraid somebody gets hurt. Okay. okay. And listen, I'm afraid sometime to get in my car and go to work. But because something can happen to you no matter where you are. And you got to be cognizant. I understand taking shots you shouldn't be taking. But one of the things Jackson Dart brings to the table, a certain toughness in running the ball, and he is a very good athlete. LSU's defense is going to have to be cognizant of that tonight. Not for him to take off running the football on a third and seven. Okay, you got things covered, and all of a sudden he makes the play.
Well, when you look at Jackson Dart in the run game and his ability to be able to pick up first downs, that's what's key for a quarterback is extending the drive and getting – the next four down so we can get closer to scoring a touchdown. And that's important. And one of the things that Jackson Dart does very, very well is pick his feet up and put him back on the ground. What that means is he's fast. He can make it happen, and he's shifty. He knows how to run with the actual football in his hand and not just straight speed, you know. And that's what's impressive to me about him. I remember a couple of years ago he came to LSU and tore us up running the football. And one of my complaints that I've had about, really the only complaint that I've had about Nussmeier was the fact of the matter that he's never done that yet. He has not taken a moment to run the football on third and two, third and five, or second and three, or fourth and one, or you know, in the goal, in the, like going into the to score in the end zone. It's just he hasn't taken that moment to run the football a little bit. I'm not asking anybody to be anything other than who they are, but there's sometimes where you got to go outside of the fabric of who you are to be able to be a little bit different so you can keep your team in the game and move the football or score points. So that's going to be the scariest thing about this Ole Miss game versus LSU to me is the unknown factor of can we stop Jackson Dart from running the football. We can cover every wide receiver that Ole Miss has.
And you know Trey is not going to be close to 100%, even if he plays.
That's fine. All of that's fine. We can cover all those guys. He can be hurt, and we're going to be right there. But what happens is the breakdown and the containment of the quarterback.
I agree.
That's the most difficult thing right there. That will beat you and eat you up all the time. So, you know, if the Saints call me next week and they want me to be the head coach, first thing I'm doing is I've got to find me a quarterback that can run the football, okay? So, I'll be looking for that call about Tuesday at 8:30. I'm going to go ahead and just, you know, not take it.
So you're not going to work? You figuring on getting that call at that time or what?
I'm going to go to work. I'm going to just pick the phone up. That's all.
We'll be back with more of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. We'll have on with us Jeff Palermo, and he'll join us for our Inside the Tiger Den segment right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're back here on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettelia along with Herb Tyler. We're at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. Come on by and visit us. They got a lot of great food and drink specials. Jason and the crew will take care of you. And again, remind everybody that if you're looking for some catering needs on game day, hey, give them a call here at Acme Oyster House. Jason will take care of that for you. They've already had a couple of trucks go out there to Tiger Stadium to take care of things for some of the events that's happening in the tailgating deal at Tiger Stadium today. Now is the time for our Inside the Tiger Den, brought to you by Go Tax Resolution, your go-to tax resolution team. Go Tax Go. And we have on our Oakwood Heart Jewelers talking text line Jeff Palermo. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Hey, Mike and Herb, how you guys doing tonight?
Doing great.
Good, Jeff.
I'll throw this out. Herb and I talked a little bit about it. It's a big opportunity for Shelton Sampson because of the receivers that are down in this game. And he had an opportunity a little earlier in the season. It did not work out for him. He was not the playmaker that I think Brian Kelly thought he potentially could be. But, man, he's got talent. Herb and I talked about this. Jeff, do you agree? This is a confidence issue with Shelton. He has got to be able to be involved in this game early on, throw him a couple short passes, build up a little confidence in him as a player We saw this in the evolution, so to speak, of Aaron Anderson.
Yep.
Well, he wasn't the playmaker for him last year. They got him a couple early throws this year, and all of a sudden now, Aaron Anderson's a huge part of this attack for LSU. Tonight, I think a lot of eyes will be is, can they get Shelton Sampson involved in this offense?
And I just wonder how much he's really going to play here, though, tonight. I mean, when Brian Kelly was asked on Thursday night about, okay, hey, if C.J. Daniels and Chris Hilton can't play, who's going to have to step up? And the two guys that he actually mentioned beforehand was Tre'Davious Green and Kamorian Pinson. You know, Tre'Davious Green seems to be a little bit more in the flow of things. And so I don't know. I don't know how much we're going to see of Shelton Sampson, but I agree with you guys. I mean, he just doesn't seem like a very confident player. And I saw this kid at Catholic High for three seasons in Baton Rouge, and this kid was making plays when he was healthy. And he had a couple of injuries here or there, a finger injury and so forth. But when the guy was healthy, he would have a huge game. He had a big game against Brother Martin in a playoff game at Ted Gormley Stadium. So I know it's in there. I mean, the guy's a four-star prospect, close to a five-star prospect. The talent is there. The size is there. The speed is there. The ability to go out and get 50-50 balls. He certainly could do it. He just needs to get a couple of catches, get a little confidence, and he'll be okay. I don't know. We'll see where you know how much he'll see here tonight. I think the four main guys tonight obviously are going to be Kyron Lacy. I think Xavier Thomas is going to see some more. Aaron Anderson and Mason Taylor, and then there may be chances if C.J. Daniels and Hilton don't play tonight. There might be a chance there for Sampson. But I think those other guys that I just mentioned, Taylor, Anderson, along with Kyron Lacy and Xavier Thomas, I think those are the four main guys tonight that are going to be catching passes for LSU.
One of the things, Jeff, we talk about guys that step up their game. How about number 40? Man, Whit Weeks. Almost like, okay, I know you got a brother on the team. I don't know if you'll be playing that. I don't think so. But it's almost like they got twins. I mean, he's here. He's there. He's up the field. He's in coverage. He runs the field east and west. Okay, he's got something I can't teach. He got instincts. He got football sports instincts to know where to put himself in a position to make a play. And I think back, this was kind of a Blake Baker guy, okay? I think Blake saw that this guy can handle a lot of different things put on his plate, not just about a guy to stop the run, but as a blitzer, as a guy in the coverage part of the game, a lot of different things. Man, has he really played well this season for LSU?
I think he's been fantastic. I think it was a couple games ago. I don't know if it was after the South Alabama game. Probably. Maybe I think it might have been the South Alabama game where I just said, you know what? I think Whit Weeks is a better linebacker than Harold Perkins. I know Harold Perkins is the guy that's going to go out there and he could get an interception for you. He could get a strip sack and stuff like that. But Whit Weeks is all over the field. You just recognize him so much more. And we LSU fans were clamoring for him to play more last year. You brought in Omar Spates a season ago. And I don't know. I don't know if promises were made or whatever it might have been. Once Omar Spates got healthy, they decided to put Whit Weeks on the bench. But he always seemed like to be one of the better linebackers on the team. So this is going to be a big game here for him tonight. I mean, you got a guy in Jackson Dart that you might have to tackle in space. Ole Miss can run the ball a little bit. They obviously got a good group of wide receivers. So looking forward to seeing a big game for him. And I really do think the injury to Harold Perkins, while unfortunate, I think you'd rather have Harold Perkins than not have him, it does open up the door for Whit Weeks to be a bigger part of this defense, and I'm excited to see what he can do.
Jeff, looking back at, I was talking about this a little bit earlier with Leanne, and I want to know, on the flip side, how can LSU's defense stop this Ole Miss offense? Because we all know what Lane Kiffin is. We all know what Ole Miss is all about. And for us, the one thing that we always talk about is how, you know, a little bit shaky our defense may be at times. So how can LSU get pumped up tonight to go against a really great offense in Ole Miss after LSU's coming off a bye week which we think that, you know, you would think you would get better schematically as well as when it comes to injuries and get a little bit more healthy. How can LSU stop this Ole Miss offense?
I think winning first down is key tonight. I mean, I wrote about it in my preview piece at WWL.com. You know, a lot of people have been talking about how, hey, LSU needs to win the battle of time possession. They need the offense to grind out drives. I don't know, guys. I think, you know, if you throw a ball to Caden Durham and he goes 60 yards for a touchdown, you really can't grind out the drive. But the way that you're able to take Ole Miss out of its rhythm offensively is to give up only 2 yards on first down or stop them for negative 1 yard. When Ole Miss becomes dangerous and they're able to run the up-tempo offense, is when you're giving up 7, 8, 12 yards on first down. That's when it becomes a big problem. So you got to win first down. And then, of course, when you do get them in that third down situation, you got to get off the field.
Yep.
I think we're going to see a lot of points here tonight. So LSU's just going to need a few defensive changing plays. A couple turnovers will be good. I don't think it's going to be pretty the entire game for LSU defensively. There's going to be big plays that Ole Miss makes. I think there's going to be nice drives that Ole Miss puts together. But in the end, can LSU get a couple stops here or there? Can they frustrate Ole Miss just enough, slow them down a little bit on first down, and see if that isn't enough? And hopefully LSU's offense could do the rest of the work.
Jeff, one of the things in watching Ole Miss this year, and it goes to show you, it depends on the talent that you had. I think the last 2 years, you were blessed with a real special running back in Quinshon Judkins. I mean, he kind of tilted the field a little bit when he hit there. Now, there was a lot of kind of swirl in the tornado around him, or things happening around him, especially late last year with him. They have not run the football as effectively. And I was talking to Deuce about it, and he was like, Mike, I don't think they're playing their best running back. I think Bentley's the guy. But he said, you know, they got some issues there, sort of away from the game, that he's not the guy. But I think now, because of injuries, it's got to be Bentley sort of carry the workload here for him for running the football. And for as much as we've talked about Lane, throwing the football around, it's his ability to run the ball, because they've run it more than any other team in the SEC the last 2 years.
Yep.
A lot of that has to do with Judkins now. I will say that, because if I had him at running back, he'd be running it too.
Yeah.
But they're not as good running the ball because of the halfback position. I'm interested to watch Ulysses Bentley tonight, because I think he'll get that opportunity to be maybe the workload guy for him as a halfback.
Well, yeah, Matt Jones, I don't think the last injury report I saw, he was doubtful, so there's probably a good chance that he doesn't play. He's the second leading rusher for Ole Miss. So, yeah, I think you might see a little bit more. I'm just really interested to see how good this Ole Miss team is. I mean, I look at the competition that they played, not very good at all. Furman, Middle Tennessee, even Wake Forest was a bad Power 4 school, or not a very good Power 4 school. They go up against Kentucky. Kentucky slows them down on first down. They lose that game. They did take care of South Carolina, and we saw South Carolina give Alabama a scare. So I give them some credit for that. But I tell you what, I'm really eager. I mean, there's been all this talk about, you know, Ole Miss is loaded. They got all these guys out of the transfer portal. This is the year for Lane Kiffin, but I'm eager to see now them in this environment here at LSU with 100,000 fans, the Tigers coming off a bye week, you know, just how good this Ole Miss team is. I think that's I'm just fascinated to see how that will play itself out. But, yeah, there's no doubt what Lane Kiffin wants to do. He would like to run the ball, but, you know, Jackson Dart is still what makes that offense go. You're talking about a guy that's averaging 350 yards passing a game. I mean, that's pretty impressive, but they certainly want to mix in the running game in there as well.
One of the things, I talked to a friend of mine who scouts the SEC, and he was telling me, when I told him, there's no question Ole Miss is better up front than that front four. And you could actually say front seven. What I don't know about is how good they are in the coverage part of the game.
Yeah.
That to me is still kind of a Marvel mystery tour for Ole Miss. How well they are in the coverage part when they're going up against an upgrade at the receiving core than what you played against, say, a South Carolina or a Kentucky. Mm-hmm. When you play in LSU, I think that's a big test for the Ole Miss secondary tonight going up against Nussmeier. And despite the fact LSU is kind of short-sheeted at receiver because of injuries, that you're playing a different quality of receiver also. That'll be a big test for Ole Miss's cornerback group in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I think, to me, if Ole Miss's defense and that secondary seems to be the weak spot, if they come out here and play tonight, play really strong, then LSU's not going to win this game. But I still have questions on truly how good they are. It seems like they're pretty good on paper. You get a cornerback from Alabama. You know, you're thinking, okay, Trey Amos, who's a new kid from New Iberia. Let's see, you know, just how good he is in this type of environment. Even the teams, I just kind of went over their schedule. I mean, South Carolina is challenged offensively. Kentucky's challenged offensively. Wake Forest is not very good. You know, Furman, all those teams. Middle Tennessee, none of them are very good. They haven't come close to facing an offense as good as LSU. And so if Garrett Nussmeier takes care of the football and if they can give him protection, I mean, you're talking about an Ole Miss defense that leads the country with 24 sacks this year. If that offensive line can step up and give Garrett Nussmeier the time he needs, he's going to make the throws. I know he had a couple interceptions against South Alabama. I think a lot of that was just they jumped on South Alabama so much. Maybe the focus was a little bit off there for Garrett Nussmeier. But when he's needed to be on point, he has been on point. I think the South Carolina game is a perfect description of that. They needed him to be at his best when they got down 17-0. And he played very, very well other than the one interception he threw that almost went for a pick six. He played very, very well. He made some NFL throws in that game. He's going to need to do that here tonight.
Jeff, you know, going back to the defensive side for LSU, what's a couple of key players should we be looking at to try to stop Jackson Dart? Because the thing that I'm thinking about is, you know, you said we need to stop him on first down, of course. But then you also said we need to figure out how to get off the field. And one of the most important things is not allowing Jackson Dart to run the football on third and long, third and short, when all the receivers are covered, right? Who do you think we should have and keep an eye on as far as LSU's defense tonight to maybe have that task to keep Jackson Dart in check?
I think Braden Swinton's is going to be big tonight. Savion Jones is going to be big tonight. I think those edge rushers need to come out and play. They got to certainly get in the backfield. Can Ahmad Bro just hang in there tough? Maybe another week here with Dominic McKinley. Maybe he grows up a little bit more. I mean, a big part of that is going to be the defensive line here. A lot of talk about JV and Tobiano now playing the star position. How much do we see of that here tonight? And then really the big question mark for LSU defensively in this game, in my mind, is who is going to play safety? We really have no idea who's going to be playing safety. We know they've rotated a bunch of guys. We've asked Brian Kelly, who seems to have emerged there, really hasn't given us any answers on that. I'm thinking it's going to be a combination of Sage Ryan, Major Burns, Deshaun Spears. I think those are the three main guys that you'll probably see back there as far as safety goes. So, for those guys, the safeties in particular, you know, tackling space is going to be key here tonight because we know Lane Kiffin is going to want to try to get his playmakers in space. Those guys are going to have to make plays. We've seen only just a little bit of Zay Alexander. I mean, how quickly could he get into midseason form here tonight? Even though Ole Miss might not have Trey Harris, they still got a good group of wide receivers, so he'll need to play very well here tonight. So I know I kind of mentioned the entire defense needs to play well. But I think it kind of starts with Braden Swinson and Savion Jones. I think if those two guys are a menace off the edge, it might slow down this Ole Miss offense pretty good.
Jeff, last question for you. You talked about the secondary. LSU got a commitment a couple hours ago from, and I know a guy you've seen play, Jacob Bradford, who's played corner, but I think a lot of projections are that he'll play safety in college football. Just a little quick synopsis on, LSU landing Jacob Bradford, who was a University of Houston commit at one time, decommitted, and now late this morning announced his commitment to LSU.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good kid for LSU. He certainly looks the part. He's got a younger brother who might be even better than him, and I'm sure that's kind of figuring into all this. But, LSU's struggling in the defensive secondary, right? They've struggled the last couple of years. This is where you're hoping that that we're starting to see the quality of defensive backs return to the state of Louisiana. You got a guy in your home city. You need him to come to LSU. And so I think it's a good get, a nice pickup for LSU. And, they keep saying the Calvary's kind of on the way when it comes to improving this LSU defensive secondary. They spent a lot of time trying to recruit that position heavily, and they do got some good players coming on campus here soon.
Jeff, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always appreciate it. Enjoy watching the game tonight, and hopefully a W for the Tigers.
Yes.
That would be great. It would be great, guys. Should be a fun game in Tiger Stadium.
Thanks so much, Jeff. We appreciate it. That's our Inside the Tiger Den segment. It was brought to you by Go Tax Resolution, your go-to tax resolution team. Go Tax Go. We'll be back with more of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show right here from Acme Oyster House. Mike Dettay along with Herb Tyler. We've got a lot more to talk about right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're back here on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettay along with Herb Tyler. We're at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. Come on by and visit us. We'll be here until 4:30. Come on by. If you don't have tickets to the game, you want to watch it, you can come here and watch it. Get a great supper out of it. They got great food and drink specials here at Acme. We're talking about a little bit about this, certainly with Shelton, but I think, too, one of the running backs has to emerge other than Caden. We do know that Brian Kelly likes to play running back by committee, and I think both of us thought this would be the year Caleb Jackson would make that move and take that step up and maybe become the number one guy, and he hasn't. Man, he went from, 210 pounds. He's 230 pounds, like somebody carved him out of stone, but you brought up the confidence part with similar to what we were talking about with Samson.
Yep.
And you brought that up also, too. You think it's a big part with Caleb.
I think it's a huge part with Caleb. I mean, it's the Caleb we saw last year is definitely not the same Caleb we see this year. When he gets the football, he's slowing down at the line of scrimmage. He's kind of unsure which way to go. He's not bringing the contact, things like that that we're used to seeing from Caleb. And to me, that's a confidence thing. And maybe we made him too big, and that makes him feel like he's not the same player that he once was. It's something I don't really know. But at the end of the day, I think the guy has a phenomenal skill set. He has the ability to be great, and he can run the football with the best of them. It's just going to be a matter of how do we gain that confidence back. You know, a lot of times as leaders and as coaches and as people who other people rely on, it's how do you get the very best out of that person? What do you do? How do you make what makes them tick? How do you light that fire on them? You know, we're all looking for the same things, right? Passion, energy, fire, the want to be here, and all those different things. And how do you get that out of people? And I just don't know how to do that with this young man because I don't know what's going on with him. But that's what I see is the problem. I mean, because it's the ability is not an issue. It's just I don't see him having fun. I don't see where he's enjoying what he's doing. I mean, he used to be in the back catching kickoffs, and he's not doing that anymore. So when you start looking down his roster as far as who's the next running back, you really only have two, Josh Williams and Caleb Jackson. That's it. who's the other guy? Where is the other guy
going to
come from?
Don't take long to call the rule.
That's right. That's it. So he needs to. We need to figure out a way to get his confidence up and get him involved in the game. Again, another person. Get him the ball in space. Let him go do something real simple stuff. You know?
Me, I'd like to throw him the ball out in the flat.
Yeah, let him catch the ball, turn up the field. That's right. I agree.
Because, okay, then you make a business decision if you're a 185-pound corner to try to go head up against Caleb at that particular rate. And I think we were so used to seeing it a few times. He flashed it last year.
Yep.
Man, that he turns speed into power real fast.
Yep.
And he can flat out run over you. But we have not seen that guy this year at all.
No. None of that. We've never seen that high energy in motion. We haven't seen this guy become who we know he's supposed to become. Because at the present moment, it doesn't look like he's going to do it. So, you know, he don't have the opportunities. He won't get it. And if Caden is healthy, I don't think he'll have the opportunity.
With 7 minutes 14 seconds left in the second quarter, Texas with a 7-3 lead over OU. Come on, we've seen these games in the 50s and 40s, and now you got an under game here with the Longhorns. Quint Ewers is the starting quarterback for the Longhorns, and so with about halfway through into the second quarter, Texas with a 7-3 lead, and Herb, you brought that up. They don't look steady on offense.
No,
Texas, they really don't.
They look out of sync.
Understand Oklahoma because they haven't looked steady all year.
Oh yeah, no, they look you know out of sync. They look like my old Volkswagen. All of the tires was all different shapes and sizes, and this sucker used to go down the road just all weird. So, but that's how they look. They don't look good right now at all. They may have to make a quarterback change if this game continues to go like this.
And, man, OU's defense is keeping them in this. I give them credit because their offense, they have really, really struggled on the offensive side of football.
Yes, sir.
We'll be back with more of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettey along with Herb Tyler. We're at Acme Oyster House right here in Baton Rouge, about a mile away from Tiger Stadium. Come on by. Tell us hi. If you don't have tickets to the game, come on here and you can watch the game. Surround sound TVs and got great food and drink specials here at Acme. We'll be back to finish it up in hour number two of our Tiger Tailgating Show right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're finishing up here in hour number two of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettey along with the legendary Herb Tyler here at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. Come on by and visit us. We'll be here until 4:30 this afternoon, but, man, they got great food, drink specials all afternoon. Also want to thank our presenting sponsor, Map Construction. We'll be back with more Tiger Tailgating right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Welcome back to our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettey along with Herb Tyler. We're at Acme Oyster House here in Baton Rouge, 3535 Perkins Road. Come on by and visit us. Also, too, if you're looking for any kind of tailgating services and for food there, Acme does that also. Give them a call here at Acme. You can talk to Jason. He can set you up for any kind of events. And so you don't have to do no cooking. Jason and the crew here will do that cooking and bring it out to you. Also want to thank our presenting sponsor, Map Construction, for our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. A little bit of Saints news. The Saints have placed safety Will Harris on injured reserve. No surprise there. Dennis Allen sort of brought that up that would happen. But finally, they have activated running back Kendra Miller from the IR. He got hurt the first day in practice. Ain't seen him since. Now, he's been practicing for a couple weeks, but finally he is off of IR and elevated to the current roster.
Yeah.
And they have elevated safety Jonathan Abram and center guard Chris Reed from the practice squad to the active roster. And Herb, a little bit about that. Man, when your offensive line is messed up like theirs is,
yeah.
I told you before the season, we're in trouble because of the offensive line play. Didn't look like that the first 2 weeks.
Nope.
But then, man, Eric McCoy goes down and no Taysom, and then all of a sudden, poof.
Vamoose.
That go to season right there.
That's exactly right. It's difficult for me because I jumped on that bandwagon the first 2 weeks.
I told you to watch that first step.
But I'm always on the bandwagon, so I'm a Saints fan. And
I get it.
I'm never going anywhere. So
I get it.
So now the last couple of weeks make me feel really bad because I know we're not that bad of a team. I mean, we're a really good team, but other teams are really good in the NFL as well. So any little small nuances that can take you away from being 100% can be detrimental to any game in the NFL.
Man,
on Sunday.
You found out who the champs were.
That's right.
Monday night.
That's right.
And they weren't good in the red zone. Just think if they were good in the red zone. Man, they'd have rolled up 40 points on the Saints.
And look, Kansas City always does what to us? Oh, not to us, but to everybody, right?
They find a way to win late.
Every game, from the first game to the last game. And they always, everybody says, oh, we don't know if Kansas City's going to do it this week. When they get in the playoffs, they're like, oh, Kansas City's back in the Super Bowl. When they get in the Super Bowl, oh, Kansas City won the game. They're done.
But that defense is really good. I mean, you can see that with Chris Jones and people say, oh, Olave wasn't involved. Well, he got targeted 6 times, but he's also getting covered by Trent McDuffie, who's one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL. And Nick Bolton, who we saw when he was at Missouri, how good of a linebacker he was. Come on. Kansas City's winning. Their defense is so good, and you got the best player in the game at quarterback in Patrick Mahomes.
Kansas City's got the one, what I think of is one of the top 3 best coaches to ever coach the NFL
ever.
Football.
So I agree.
When he was at Philadelphia, you know, he would always go to a championship or the championship for the
NFC. Just never
NFC.
Won the Super Bowl. He went once, but didn't win it.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, he's teetering on that, and he knows what's the next step, but he can't just quite get there. Now he's found out what that is.
Yeah, you got Patrick Mahomes. Hey, seal that deal real quick.
Yeah, and I don't even know if it's so much that. I think now he understands how to prepare these guys and how to put these guys in the best situation so they could be the great them. And then now they just, you know, I think he got mad one time on the sideline last week. He did something that was kind of out of character. But outside, you never see him upset. He's a phenomenal leader, puts those people in the right situations. And then he knows how to finish football games. And then he allows them to be themselves. It's not like robots out there. And that's the one thing that I like about it. It doesn't look like it's all pre-planned. It looks like it's going according to plan, and it's just natural.
You know, one of the things with him, and we saw it with Coach Saban late in his career too, his ability to adjust.
To adapt, yes.
To the different generations.
Yes.
That you've coached throughout the years.
Yes.
And sometimes that's really difficult.
It is.
Because I don't have
pride.
I don't have nothing in common with a 17, 18-year-old.
No, it's called pride. Yeah. And it's called you're going to do it my way or it's the highway, right? But, you know, what happens is
you get fired if you do that.
Well,
that way.
The people who sustain careers and whatever it is in their field are consistently being themselves, but allowing others to be themselves and then being able to understand those people and being connected and relatable, all those different things. So, and that's one of the reasons why Coach Saban got out. He said, I don't want to do that anymore. I'm done. I don't want to be this. I'm going to be who I want to be, and that's it. But, you know, you look at Lane Kiffin and you look at those kind of guys and Andy Reid, how, you know, he can relate to the best of the best, the youngest to the oldest player that he has on his team. And it showed last Monday night, and they're going to show again this Sunday and every Sunday from now on.
I think it was a big reason why Chip Kelly gave up the job as head coach at UCLA to become the offensive coordinator at Ohio State. I mean, I don't want that responsibility. I just want to handle my group on the offensive side. I don't want to handle the big group anymore because there is a societal change, okay, a generational change, however you want to call it, and you got to change with them. If not, you get left behind. Okay, we in different businesses, okay?
Yep.
But it's the same way in the business world.
It's the same.
Exact same thing.
Well, you know, it's the same in anything that you do is when you're dealing with people and when you're trying to lead people and when you're trying to be there for people. And sometimes you just have to be able to change yourself. How about that? The first thing I always do whenever someone ever tells me anything about anything, well, what part did I play in it? Let me look in the mirror. I always call it Michael Jackson. Let me look at the man in the mirror and ask the right questions. Well, what did I do right? What did I do wrong? How could I have done something different in the situation? Or was I supposed to do something different in the situation? Or did I handle it perfectly? And then once I answer those questions, then I can move on. So with that being said, I'm saying every time that the new generation comes up, how do we adapt and change to what's new? Because it's going to be new. It's never going to stay the same. Change is inevitable.
And it changes quickly. As we get older, it's a much quicker world with it. Yep. We'll be back to finish it up here on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road. Come on by and visit them. Hey, Jason and the crew will take real good care of you here at Acme on 3535 Perkins Road. We'll be back to finish it up right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're finishing up here on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike to tell you along with Herb Tyler. We're at 3535 Perkins Road, Acme Oyster House. Come on by and visit us. They got some great food and drink specials. Jason will take in the crew. We'll take real good care of you here. Also, too, if you need anything from a catering standpoint, give him a call here at Acme. Talk to Jason. He can take care of that. Already made a couple runs while we were doing the show over to deliver some food. So if you need that part, man, give him a call here at Acme. Save that cooking. Let Acme do that cooking for you. Also, we want to also thank 2MAP Construction, our presenting sponsor. Do a really great job each and every week. MAP build beyond. So we couldn't do this without MAP, and so we thank them. Herb, looking at this game, kind of give us a few keys to victory for LSU in this game. And I think all of it, to me, centers around controlling Jackson Dart.
That's right. That's what I was going to say. So the number one thing is to stop Jackson Dart from being Jackson Dart. And you're never going to stop him, but how can you slow him down?
Yeah.
You know, the first thing I think you got to do is you got to really contain him from running the football. Allow him. If he's going to beat you throwing the ball.
Yeah.
You know, do that. I think that's so we have to figure out on defense, how do we contain him? And then also, again, let's go back to defense, because I think that, you know, Lane Kiffin is a smart person. I don't think he's going to come out trying to chunk the ball. I think he's going to try to establish a run game, to be honest with you. So how do you stop the run game from Ole Miss? I think it's the second thing. And then if you go to a third key, though, if you want to call it the victory, is how does LSU get off to a fast start, put some points on the board, and keep going and be consistent scoring touchdowns? Because in this game, you're going to have to score touchdowns. I don't think you kicking field goals and punting the ball ain't gonna get it. Our defense is not good enough to hold these guys.
We talked a little bit about this in the segment we did with Lee and Herring, but I think Xavion Thomas plays a big part in this game.
Yep.
Because of his return skills, especially in the punt return game where we saw him a couple different times, man, he was close to breaking it out. Didn't make that big breakout run. But we've seen it a couple different times. This may be a situation where he gets a shot against Ole Miss, and that could be a game changer in a close game.
Well, Thomas is one of those guys that's electrifying, and if he can get something going like that, that would be outstanding. And I think that him coming from Mississippi State, having a true bad taste in his mouth for Ole Miss, I think he's going to be looking to probably take one to the house. Now, you turn around and you say, okay, even if it's not a punt return or something like that, I think just him getting the ball in his hand in open field, in open space, and making something happen, I think he's going to try to take one to the house for sure.
The multiple tight end sets, I think we will see a lot
that
tonight with Tre'Davious Green, also Kate Pimpton, to team up with Mason Taylor, because you sort of short-sheeted at the wide receiver position because of the injuries.
Well, here's my thing. Why are you not doing that now? Regardless of who's there and available.
Especially in the red zone. That's where I would.
You could do it at any zone. I mean, these guys are untouchable. I mean, you've seen, let's take an example out of Andy Reid's playbook.
He used four against the Saints.
Exactly. So, I mean, it didn't matter where it was at. It was all open field, short yardage, red zone, whatever it is. So, it's you know, let's be a little bit creative. Let's understand our ability or availability of the people we do have, and let's try to go out there and be unconventional. I mean, it's okay to be different.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is if Trey Thomas plays in this game, I do know who his offensive coordinator was for a little while at Louisiana Tech, Joe Sloan. So Joe sort of knows a little bit about Trey and what he can do, what he can't do real well. But, man, you talk about a playmaker, Trey Harris is that. He's a big-time playmaker. Now, again, health-wise, is he 70%? you know, who knows? But I'll take his 70 over a lot of people's 100.
That's right. Well, you know what? Whenever you got a guy who always wanted to go to LSU.
And now, he always back, wanted to.
And he comes back here. It doesn't matter what percent health he is in. He's always going to give 100%. And he's going to want to do the very best that he can to show LSU why they should have offered him a scholarship.
You know, this is back-to-back years, and this state has turned into wide receiver state. But Keon Coleman sort of said the same thing. He's from Opelousas, goes to Michigan State, then he goes to Florida State, and then, you know, he was a second-round pick at the Buffalo Bills. And now we're seeing it here again with Trey Harrison. I think we're going to continuously see it because of so many really great athletes that are now playing wide receiver in the state of Louisiana.
Yeah, they're going to go off and go play somewhere else, which is okay, but we need to keep most of them here. And, you know, the biggest thing for us is we're proud of those guys. No matter where they go, no matter where they play, we're proud to say that they're Louisianians. And whenever they come home to play against LSU, we're going to boo them and all of that stuff. But when they go
play, we're going to cheer them if they play somebody else.
That's right. Exactly right. That's how that works.
That's it. And at halftime, Texas with a 21-3 lead over Oklahoma. And a lot of Oklahoma's issues, I'll be honest with you, Herb, they self-inflicted wounds. I mean, they got gunshots. They don't have enough Band-Aids to hold it out. They have really kind of messed this up because they actually kept this game very close for a while.
Yeah, they did.
And then now Texas's offense kind of rolled. And they missed a field goal at the end, or it could have been even worse.
That's right. You know, it's one of those things where sometimes you just can't get out of your own way. And that's Oklahoma. And for me, they've been that way, you know, for quite some time. They just don't have it. But Texas is a team that you can't make mistakes against. They're too talented. They have too good of a coach. And then they're playing at Texas. So this is not the game where you make mistakes and implode from the inside.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting as the season goes along for Texas is how they handle the weight of the crown.
Yeah.
Of being number one, and because somebody's going to catch you in this schedule.
Yes.
Somebody's going to beat you here.
Yes.
And you know it. I don't think anybody's going to come out of the Southeast Conference without having at least one loss, and I think for most teams it's going to be two or more.
Well, I think the biggest thing for Texas to me is not so much how do they handle the crown, but when they do have that difficult game, what do they do next? Not so much handling that particular game, because I think they can win it. And they're going to probably have a loss. But then again, there's nobody else, too. Like, who else is the next guy up? Who's the next team? You know, is it Ohio State? Is it Alabama?
We'll find out about Ohio State tonight.
That's right. You know what I'm saying?
When they play Oregon.
So who is it? And maybe they are the big boys on the block, but that doesn't mean that you just automatically win every game.
How much did this game as a player mean to you when you played Ole Miss? Because you heard it from guys that had played this game before. Maybe not necessarily in your background, but other guys haven't played it. Man, you got to beat Ole Miss.
Yeah, it means a lot. It's one, again, it's the next state rival. It's a neighboring state. A lot of people that I know went to Ole Miss, but always wanted to beat Ole Miss. They didn't recruit me either. So a little something there. Because, you know, I was the all-state receiver, DB, punter, kick return, kicker, all that stuff. I wanted to miss the interception when I was at Carr in junior high. Had 9 interceptions when it was on the strike. You want me to keep going or you want me to just?
Man, if I wouldn't know no better, the accent's different, but I swear I'd be working with A-Bear again with all these accolades. Herb, great job again.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much. Thank Luke Augusta also does a fantastic job keeping us rolling each and every week. We'll send it to the LSU Radio Network. Thank you for listening to our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show.